received a call this afternoon, this evening, from someone who was not going to be able to be with us, and they asked that today's lesson be recorded so that she could listen to it later. And so, going to be asking a volunteer. Thank you, Nathan. To assist us to try to capture some of the comments as we look at the book of Mark. Mark was the first gospel that was written, and we've looked at the first two chapters. We're into chapter three now. Looked at the miracle of the shriveled hand, and how people were with Jesus. They were looking to trip him up. They were looking at him. Jesus got angry because of their lack of compassion. After that, in Mark chapter 3, verse 7, Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the lake. And we talked about this last week, and I want to pause here to reflect. Mark records some 11 different occasions in which Jesus, how do I say this, escaped. He escaped from the people crowding around him. He escaped for rest. He escaped for prayer, and he escaped to teach those 12 who we're going to talk about tonight, give them special instruction. But 11 different times he had to escape in order to find rest. And you say, Jack, why are you making a point of that? Verse 20, when we get down to it, we'll explain why I'm making a point of that. The thought here that being that Jesus had to take measures in his own hands, because otherwise the crowd was just going to run him over. People found out that Jesus could heal, and what happened? Every dog came out of the woods, didn't they? Everybody came by to be healed. Anybody that was sick, there had an ailment, anybody that had any type of disease or an evil spirit was pushed to Jesus, to where he had no rest. So I just wanted to make that point in passing. We'll get there in a few minutes. The thought here, Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the lake, and a large crowd from Galilee followed. When they heard what he was doing, many people came to him from Judea, and we talked about all these different areas, that there was only one area in which Jesus did not go and see the people in their location, and that's Idumea, which was previously what?
Well, it never was either. It's where the Edomites went.
It's where the Edomites went to. Thank you. I'm glad you corrected my wording. Chapter 7 through 12, because of the crowd, Jesus told his disciples to have a small boat ready. The thought here is that it was not a fishing boat. What this was a rowboat. So it's a different word than what is used later when Jesus crosses the sea and is asleep and the storm comes up. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Same passages. Whenever evil spirits saw him, they fell down before him and cried out, "You're the Son of God." He gave them strict orders not to talk about that. He went up onto a mountainside. He called those special people to him, and he appointed 12. He made 12 people his ambassadors, his envoys. He is going to delegate his power and authority to them so that they might, as they are going to be fulfilling his duties, they're going to be preaching, proclaiming publicly the message of the word. And they're going to have the authority to heal. as a verification of that. He is sending them out that they may preach and to have authority to drive out demons. This is, I believe, where we stopped last week in chapter 3, verses 13 and following, where we talked about these are the 12 that he appointed. These are the 12 he appointed. He appointed Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter, James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John, to whom he gave the names Boanerges, which means sons of thunder. He appointed Philip, Andrew, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, the son of Alphaeus, Simon, the zealot, and Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him. That's about as far as we got last week. I asked as a homework assignment, because some of you have taught about the apostles in various classes. What do we know about the apostles? Well, I'll give you a moment to get your thoughts together. These are some observations that we could make. Peter, we find in Mark chapter 5, verse 37, chapter 8, verse 29, verses 32, 33, and 40. What was Peter? He was impulsive. Who was the first one into the tomb? Who? Who was the first one in the tomb? It was Peter. Peter and John, after Mary had found that Jesus had been raised, she went and told the apostles. Peter and John went out to the tomb. John bends down and looks inside, and whoop, Peter zips in. Who was it that jumped out of the boat when he saw Jesus walking on the water? Man, he's impulsive. A little fearful. James. James, we read about in Mark chapter 3, verse 17, and chapter 10, we'll read quite a bit about him. Chapter 10, verses 35 through 41. James was, he was angry. He was one of these people that was not only ambitious and judgmental, because people were wrong. People need to be corrected. James was an angry, ambitious, and judgmental. John was quick-tempered and ambitious. What do we remember about the ambitiousness? Who wanted to be at the right hand and the left hand of Jesus?
They all wanted to be on the right hand.
Her mother did, but also they asked for it too. They did. Andrew, he was the excited introducer to Jesus. Come! We found the Messiah. Come on. Philip, doubted the feeding of the 5,000. For which one? For Philip, I've got several references. John chapter 1, verses 43 through 46. Chapter 6, verses 8 and 9. 14, verses 8 and 9. That's all I've got for Philip. John chapter 1, 43 through 46. Chapter 6, verses 8 and 9. Chapter 14.
The one in John doesn't mention, where's the one about doubting feeding of the 5,000?
I believe that is, let's look them up. Let's look at chapter 6 then. John chapter 6. Verses 8 and 9 is my reference. Verse 7. Philip answered him, speaking of Jesus, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, for everyone to receive a little. I mean, talking about the feeding of the 5,000.
Well, he knew he didn't have enough money.
I think it implies the doubt that Jesus would be able to do what Jesus was wanting to do. Definitely. Yeah. I think so. I think that he became surprised.
His statement is 200 penny worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that everyone should take a little.
Mm-hmm. if
I see no doubt of Jesus in that.
Okay.
I
maybe I'm reading into that, but what else do we know about Philip then? There is other things. Matthew 14.
And verse 16. Thank you. Matthew 14 and verse 16. Jesus said to them, they do not need to go away. You have something. You give them something to eat. And they said to him, we have here only 5 loaves and 2 fish. And he says, bring them to me. I mean, that would, if you were going to say that, it was doubted that he could feed them. I think that might be a better verse, but.
Okay. I'll write that down too, so I remember that. I was thinking Philip was also involved in the discussion in John 14. Does that ring a bell with anybody? Yes. Jesus in John chapter 14. Jesus is announcing that he's going to be leaving. Verse 6, he says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. If you have known me, you would have known my Father also. From now on, you know him, and you have seen him. And Philip said unto him, Lord, show us the Father, and it is enough. Maybe doubt is a strong word. But definitely, I think we see perhaps carried, perhaps not. Bartholomew. Bartholomew. References I have on Bartholomew is John chapter 1, verses 45 through 51, and chapter 21, verses 1 through 14, where Bartholomew is mentioned. Matthew. Hate to say this on April 15th, but taxmen, especially Jewish taxmen, were considered dishonest and greedy because they lived by what they did. They collected the tax, and anything extra that they collected is what they lived off of. So, greedy? Perhaps. Who knows? Thomas?
Just a thing on how the tax collectors made a living. They bid for a territory, a tax district. Mm-hmm. They bid so much. And the emperor usually took it to the highest bidder. So if a man's, in other words, they paid the revenuers. That's how they paid the revenuers. That's what the Jews considered them.
Definitely.
But I don't know that I have seen enough to say that Matthew was dishonest and greedy.
That's definitely how the Jews saw him.
Well, that's how, yeah. Absolutely. Are you saying this is what was thought of them or what they were?
I think that's what the people around saw them.
Well,
and
yeah.
So we can take that consideration. This is how they're going to be perceived. What we're seeing here, or what I was trying to show here with this graphic, is that Jesus took a very mixed group of people to represent him. He took the high priest of the day. He took the chief Levite. And he didn't. Did he? He didn't take any of the scribes.
Matthew, the opportunity to be dishonest was certainly there.
Yes. But whether he lived up to that opportunity or fell.
Well, we don't know. Maybe he did sometime. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he didn't at all. But at least once the king got his money, the king would be satisfied and there would be that opportunity. And oftentimes, whether a person is dishonest or not, they are lumped in with a group that has a reputation. And, this is something that we make this mistake of doing sometimes, is lumping people in with other people that have some type of reputation. And I think we have to be careful when we do that.
Definitely, definitely. There was not only the mixture of personalities, but notice that Simon was a zealot. He was as much anti-Rome. And I was trying to think of an illustration of what would be more representative of him. Who's the most conservative politician we have today? Well, it's not Rush Limbaugh. Don't have one. But you might consider him kind of like the Rush Limbaugh, whatever his name is, Limbaugh of that day. He was so against Rome that they would go to arms. That's the zealots. Yet James identified with Cleopas.
I think that's another situation where we lump Simon in as a zealot, but we don't really know anything about him. I mean, we're not of the apostles we have there, less is known about him than any of them.
I agree. I was looking to see my notes here real quick. Of the apostles, there's one glaring person that's missing. And before you say Paul, that's not who I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about the author of the book that we're reading. And because he wasn't an apostle. We're studying Mark. Sorry. Yeah. He was Barnabas' nephew, and who was his other uncle? Special hint. Jesus healed that uncle's mother-in-law. Peter. We read that in Mark chapter 1. He's not an apostle. He was not one of the 12 anointed or appointed by Jesus to be his emissary. But yet, he is the author through the Spirit, or the Spirit through him, wrote what we're reading today. Who were the four strongest leaders?
Peter, James, and John were the closest. And I would say Philip or Andrew would have been the next one.
Most commentators indicate that Peter, James, John, and Andrew would be considered the strongest leaders. The most reflective are those who are the ones that would consider questioning people would be Philip and Bartholomew, Matthew and Thomas. And when grouped and tried to put in groups, the most practical four are Thomas, Bartholomew, Simon, and Judas. Isn't that interesting? Judas. Well, knowing that Jesus is going, or that Judas is going to betray Jesus, why did he appoint him? Why did he choose him? Why did he give him the treasury to hold?
I've been part of the plan.
Yep, because it was part of the plan from the beginning. But he had to be a practical person. Why? Who kept the money bag? Judas did. Well, I didn't have too much to say about on the apostles. I felt that we needed to say something. Did somebody have some other observations or studies that they had on the apostles? Paul?
Well, apparently they weren't wealthy people. They weren't educated people. I mean, I'm sure that we'd have to say that the Apostle Paul was, for sure. I'm not really sure about any of the others, but it's doubtful that they were the people of the day. Those common people that Jesus could go to and would hear him and be the most likely to respond, I believe, would be. And this group that he has here, you know, they're just like everybody else. They had their problems, sin problems and everything else. And really, Jesus had his work cut out to train these men. But they all, you know, had the ability to listen and learn.
Just as you're talking, I was thinking about John chapter 17, where Jesus prayed for not only those, the 11, that God had given to him and put into his hands, that he had lost none save one, the son of perdition, which is Judas. What did he say about these people in his prayer?
About three chapters
worth. At least one. Chapter 17 is what I was thinking about. That they're the ones that are going to be teaching so that others would believe and be one in him as he is in the Father. I think that's verse 21, if I remember about right. So there's a lot of importance, or needs to be a lot of importance understood in regards to the apostles. Well,
one thing for sure, the Pharisees and the scribes, they weren't going to listen to Jesus.
They've already made up their minds, hadn't they? They've already, as we were talking or reading in chapter 2, they had already decided to, what, get with Herodians, to the people that were supporting Herod's mess of people, and to get rid of Jesus.
Also, that they were making money without, he's there with Jesus coming as the Christ, they'd be losing money, sacrifices.
It's interesting how often things do boil down to money. That's right. Well, let's go ahead. If there's any other comments about the apostles? Bill?
I go along with what Paul said in the first part of Acts. It certainly indicates that the 12, once they had been given the Holy Spirit, that they all participated in the preaching and teaching. The mentions that they devoted themselves to the apostles' doctrine, and then later in chapter, I believe, 6, where they appointed the deacons, they brought all of the 12 together to consider this. It was not just one, apparently, at that time, or two, but all the 12 were fully engaged in this process at this time anyway. We don't know a lot about them from then on, at least some of them, but I guess history says that they scattered throughout the world to preach the gospel.
Yeah. It's amazing that people, 12 people that were of diverse backgrounds, different personalities, whatnot, Jesus could unify into one voice. Well, let's go ahead and look at chapter 3, verse 20. And there's a thought here that I find very interesting. When Jesus entered a house, now some people are wondering what house this was. Was this his house in Capernaum, or was this Peter's house? Don't know. Mark says, when Jesus entered a house, and again a crowd gathered so that he and his disciples were not even able to eat. When his family heard of this, they came to take charge of him. For they said, King James Version, I love it, he is beside himself. Isn't that a nice way of saying it? Literally, they thought that he was so wrapped up in things going on that he was just losing his mind. If he didn't have time to eat, what does that mean? Didn't have time to sleep either. If he didn't have time to eat or sleep, do you think he bathed regularly? Probably not. What I do see here is that Jesus' family was not with him because they came to search him out. Now, I don't know how to illustrate that, except for an event that happened when I was about 20. Gallup is a small community of about, 15,000. On weekends, it's about 18,000. On ceremonial weekends, it's probably about 25,000. So I don't know how to describe the size of the community. But Jack was in the habit of Sunday evenings and Wednesday evenings, after services, getting with some other members, going out and having ice cream, and sitting and talking. Now, this, I have to tell you, I want to tell my age now. It was before cell phones. Okay? So, Mom and Dad could not track me. On more than one occasion, Mom and Dad drove the streets of Gallup, New Mexico, having to come into town trying to find me to make sure I was okay. They were worried about me. Some versions read it was his friends that did this. Verse 31 explains that this was his brothers and his mother. Mothers, you ever get concerned about your kids? Do you ever catch yourself wanting to twist somebody's ear to eat their vegetables? Do you ever... I don't need to go any further. You know what I'm talking about, right? Well, that's why I picture Mary. She sought him out. The word used to seek... or found him, or whatever your version reads, is the same word used in chapter 1, I believe verse 14, and we sought the Messiah. What did that take? That took a little bit of diligence. That took a little bit of examination. That took a little bit of hunt. Why? Because they thought that he was out of his mind. He was beside himself. It is a term that indicates a sense of ecstatic, is what it says, in the sense of a psychic derangement. Losing the grip of reality is what the Greek word means. They thought he was crazy. I think it's interesting that we read in Luke chapter 2 and verse 42, after Jesus at the age of 12 stayed at Jerusalem and was in the temple, and he was what? Teaching and discussing the law with the scribes, the Pharisees, and the leaders. What was Mary's response? What was Mary's reaction? Well, when she found him, when they found him, what was her reaction? Verse 42. She treasured these things in her heart. She treasured these things. She stored them up. But here we see where verse 31 again, identifying who these people are, that she didn't have the strength to restrain her other sons. I don't know. Observation.
They very well could have been fearful for him too.
Yeah.
You know, he's got all these people around him. He's got people that don't like him. You know, they could have very well been fearful that something would happen to him.
They were going to take charge of him. They were going to take custody of him. They were going to not ask him politely if he wanted to come home.
The difference in the King James there says when his family, and King James says friends. What makes them translate that? Because to me that could be two different things.
It could be. The word itself that is translated by some versions as family and others as friends is kind of almost like a pronoun. It is nondescript. But verse 31 defines who we're talking about.
That could be 2 hours later. I mean, verse 31 says, I lost my place here. Oh, here we are.
31 says his own people.
Verse 31 says, then came his brethren and mother, and standing without, sent unto him, calling him. Mm-hmm. I don't see how that necessarily connects to verse 20.
Okay. Well, how does... I mean, I see your question, because there are a couple verses in between, but this is the same event.
Well, it doesn't say nothing here in verse 31 about him wanting to take him.
True. No, that was verse 21.
Yeah.
Yeah. They stayed outside the house. They sent somebody in to get him out, right? Verse 31, and they sent word to him and called him. A crowd was sitting around about him, and he said, behold. Same event. There is no time lapse in that, Mark.
There were a lot of people there. There could have been friends and family there.
Definitely. Could have been.
And the friends were doing one thing. And because all it says in 31 is that their family was outside and they're looking for you.
Yeah, I think... Go ahead.
To me, it's whichever version you're reading, because New American says, then his mother and his brothers arrived, and standing outside, they sent word to him. So it sounds like at one time they were coming, and then they arrived. But
two possible events, possibly. They're looking for him. Why are they looking for him? Because they're concerned about him.
It just says, when his own people heard of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's 21.
Well, let me give you something to consider. You've heard this saying before. Blood is thicker than water. Jesus is going to use this statement without mentioning it, because he's going to go one step further. Physical relationships do not always correspond with the spiritual relationships. True statement? Sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. But what he's saying is, and what did Jesus say? Jesus went ahead and said, well, who are my mother? Who are my mother and my brothers, he asked. Then he looked at those seated around in a circle round about him and said, here's my mother. Here's my brothers. Whoever does God's will is my brother, my sister, and my mother. Here's my family. Whose family? Well, Mark 3, verse 35. Whoever does God's will is my brother, sister, and mother. Luke chapter 11. Blessed is the mother who gave you birth. But Jesus replied, blessed rather are those who hear the word of God and obey it. Those are the people that are blessed. John chapter 15, verse 14. You're my friends. What? If you do what I command. Or John chapter 14, verse 15. We talk about relationships. Friends. Hey, I got your back. Right? Who is really, truly a friend? Who is really, truly someone that loves you and supports you and helps you? Jesus said, if you love me, keep my commandments. If you love me. Parents, did you ever tell your kids, if you love me, you'll clean your room tonight? No? Mom was different, I guess.
Well, I was always threatened with grounding.
Pardon?
I was always threatened with grounding.
With grounding. She showed her love to you that way, huh? Just a thought. Well, our time has escaped. I wanted to give that thought to you to ponder on. Jesus said, whoever does God's will is my brother. One last screen, because Jesus talks about the will of God quite often. He says in John chapter 4, verse 34, my food is to do the will of him who sent me. That which sustains me is to do his will. John chapter 6, verse 38, I have come not to have my own way. I hate to tell you, Nathan. Jesus said, I ain't important. I do nothing on my own but speak just what the Father has taught me. I have come not to do my own will, but to do the will of him who sent me. The world must learn that I do exactly what my Father commanded me. We in this society have rights and demand them. Jesus had rights and said, my will, not my will, but your will be done. And that, I think, is the thought here behind who is my brothers, my mother, and following. Well, we'll look at the interlude that next week, chapter 3, verses 22 through 30. Question. In this interlude, in this passage where this deposition from Jerusalem comes to check out what's happening at Capernaum, they're going to accuse Jesus of two things. And we have talked about this, so I want you to answer the question. Is it possible? Is it possible today to commit the unpardonable sin? The unpardonable sin is to what? Blaspheme the Holy Spirit. So, rustle that out. I think I've even heard, I know I've read this week, but I think I've even heard us mention it, that it cannot happen today. I'm not so sure, so I appreciate your thoughts on that. Anything else before we conclude? And I'm sorry, 5 minutes late. No other thoughts? Let's conclude with a prayer.